We've had many stories about the great sage Rabbi Akiva. If you recall, we discussed that Rabbi Akiva was a descendant of Geirim. Rabbi Akiva only started learning at a later period in his life after he had lost his first wife. He was left with a child, Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha. And his wife Rachel is the one that really got him to go learn Torah. Rabbi Akiva lived a very long life until he was tortured to death by the Romans. And Rabbi Akiva taught us a lot. Rabbi Akiva led the war against the Romans together with Bar Kochva. He had his students join Bar Kochva in the war against the Romans. Rabbi Akiva's disciple, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, went in his footsteps in the attitude against the Romans. Now, we have many stories and many, many teachings from Rabbi Akiva. All of the oral law really rests on Rabbi Akiva's shoulders. The Talmud tells us in Sanhedrin that the Stam Mishnah, Stam Tosefta, Stam Sifri, Stam Sifra, all the different forms of oral law are all composed, compiled by the disciples of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva is really, really the strength behind the oral law. If you recall, Moshe Rabbeinu saw Rabbi Akiva in a vision and he asked God, "Why are you giving the Torah through me? He is such a great man, better give it through him." So Rabbi Akiva was an exceptional Talmid Chacham and an exceptional human being. He taught us many things about how to treat our fellow man. As we discussed, he's the one that taught that Bikul Cholim is like giving life to the person, the importance of taking care of a person that's ill and taking care that the place is he's resting in is well taken care of. So Rabbi Akiva and his wife Rachel had a wonderful daughter. And Rabbi Akiva was told by the stargazers that on the day that his daughter would get married, she would be bitten by a snake and she would die. And so Rabbi Akiva kept this knowledge in his heart, but when the time came that his daughter got engaged, and as the day of her wedding approached, there was a gnawing feeling in Rabbi Akiva's heart. We believe that Jews can change their fortune. Everyone has a certain fortune that's declared in heavens that can be seen by the stars. But God gives us the capacity to overcome that fortune, as God told Avraham Avinu. And so Rabbi Akiva is concerned for his beloved daughter, but he puts his faith in Hashem. Like the Pasuk says, Tamim tiyem Hashem lokecha, be whole with Hashem, as the Ramah quotes this Pasuk in a few different places in Halacha. So they prepare the wedding. And remember, Rabbi Akiva was already a very wealthy man because his father-in-law had given him all the wealth after he recognized that this was the great son-in-law that he got. And so the wedding day comes and everything passes in peace. And many guests are arriving. And obviously, if Rabbi Akiva, the chief rabbi, is marrying off his daughter, you can imagine it was a big affair. So there's a lot of singing and dancing. Chazal tell us that the biggest rabbis used to dance in front of the chasen and kala to make them happy. And everyone's sitting and eating the festive meal. And the poor man comes to the hall. And he's hungry. And he looks at all the delicious food that everyone's eating. And he asks, I'd like something to eat. But everyone's busy. They're in the middle of a wedding. Who has time to hear the poor man? The waiters, well, they're busy serving the official guests. The guests, they're busy eating and drinking. No one noticed the poor man on the side. The only one who noticed was the kala. And so she quietly got up and took the portion that her father had given her for herself, and she went out and gave it to the poor man. No one saw it. No one noticed. No one noticed that the kala hadn't eaten anything and had given her own portion to the poor man. And now it came the evening, and the kala wanted to take a nap. So we see that their weddings were a long affair, something like the British weddings, you know, they're a 14-hour affair. So she had worn her veil, And the veil was held with a long needle that ran into her hair. So she took out the long gold needle from her hair, and where's she going to put it? So there, she couldn't find a place. She looked in the wall, and there's a little crack between two stones. So she sticks the needle into the crack between the walls to keep the needle there. Now, when came to take the needle out of the wall, she pulled the needle out, and at the end of the needle, she sees is a dead, poisonous snake. She calls her father, and her father sees the dead snake that she killed unwittingly as she put the needle in the wall. And when he saw that, he remembered his trepidations, what he had been told. And he turned to his daughter and he said, "Tell me, did you do anything unusual yesterday? Did you do any act of kindness?" And she thought, and she said, "The only thing I could think of is there was a poor man who came to the wedding. Everyone was busy. He wanted to eat, so I gave him my meal." And Rabbi Akiva said, "Ah, tzedakah, tzedakah tatzil mimavet. Because you gave that poor man the meal, that's why you're alive today." And from this story evolved the custom that a chassan and kala on the day of their wedding give meals to the poor. There's a custom, and many soup kitchens have chassanim and kalas come and volunteer on the day of their wedding. They actually give the meals to the poor. And those who can't make it to the soup kitchen on the day of their wedding, well, today we have this thing called a credit card. You could donate, and you could donate the meals to the poor. You don't actually have to be there to give it. So this custom, one of the things when I learn with chatanim, one of the things I do is I give them brochures from the different soup kitchens in Jerusalem that I've been impressed are legitimate, because in keeping with this custom, it's a nice thing to do, to donate on the day of the wedding some food to the poor. In ancient times, there was a custom that when people got married, so if they could afford it, they'd make two weddings. There was a wedding that a person funded for his own children, and together with his own children, they'd marry off a couple that was poor. Anyone who could afford a wedding would really make it a larger wedding, and then two people in town would get married. And then this way, the poor could have a nice wedding too. In the halacha, it's discussed because the question is, how exactly do you work it out? How do you do two kiddushin at a time? How do you do all of that? But at the end of the day, this was the custom. And today in the United States, what they do is, you could contact the different organizations like Tomchei Shabbos, and when you make a simcha, a bar mitzvah, or a wedding, so you can either donate a certain number of meals, or you could tell them, "I'm setting aside table number 13. You take any family you feel needs a night out or a good meal, and you send them to table number 13, and you could have certain tables, and no one knows who's guests that you know and who you don't know. And this way the family comes in, they have a beautiful meal, they have a night out, and no one has to know about it aside from the host and the family themselves."